This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is BFM 89.9, 13th of January, 6 o'clock, tapat-tapat in the morning. How are you, everybody?
Good morning. I'm good, it's Friday, Junior! I'm so happy, I'm so excited.
Wow, okay. But you've also got that quizzical look on your face on a Thursday, which means you've been scouring the internet with your digits looking for information.
I know. Data. I've been agonizing, you know, because I found out yesterday afternoon I have to attend a black tie event next Friday. And I'm now agonizing, how do I get a tuxedo? Or should I get a tuxedo?
Megla.
I know. So my brother has been scolding me. He's like, you go and buy a tuxedo. But my friends are saying, no, rent. You're hardly going to wear a tuxedo. So just rent it. So I'm still deciding whether I should buy or rent.
I think you should make, actually. Customize it, you know, to your fitness.
All you old men are recommending that to me.
Yeah, you know, because you will use it.
You think so?
I glossed over that, Phil.
Yeah, even Shaoning is telling me, make la, I'm going to go and make it. I think it's easier, right?
So anyway, I want to talk about Shabby Singh because he unfortunately passed last night. And I mean, I didn't know the guy, but I thought he was a good man. I thought he was a good footballer.
And a very eloquent football pundit, I must say.
Well, he was, yeah. A lot of people know him through his work in football.
Yes, I think really mourning, I think, a passage of someone, I think, who has really made a big impact in our lives.
Yeah, so RIP, Shabby. Malaysia is much diminished without you.
Yeah, but going forward, we do have a very heavy show and a very interesting show today because we'll be talking to Chiu Mei to talk about what can we do to address the learning losses among primary school students. Because, you know, in Malaysia, we've had over 200 days of studying at home and learning from home, and that's been very challenging. So that's a conversation we're going to have with her. And then later also, we'll be having a discussion with Brendan Sobey about the aviation sector outlook. You know, December was very challenging for the European and US airlines because of Omicron. So I wonder whether the impact of Omicron has taken its toll on Asia Pacific Airlines as well.
Okay, I'm sure that's going to be hugely interesting to watch out for. And of course, we'll come back after this in a couple of minutes and talk about what is being increasingly known as the Great Resignation. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Haim with The Steps, one of Phil's favorite songs.
I love that song.
That's why I say, right, The Steps.
I'm so into doing steps every day. I try and do 12,000, 13,000 steps a day, although that's totally not relevant to the song.
Well, what is relevant is the steps being taken by American workers. They're doing something that Malaysians are, you know, very reluctant to do typically, which is that they're leaving their jobs without a backup plan. And apparently, according to Bloomberg, right, there's a real reason for that, and it's not related to do with money.
Exactly. I think you are saying basically this company, Culture X, they've run a survey across 38 industries and found that company culture is 12.4 times more likely than compensation or salary to predict whether an employee leaves.
So even if you're being paid a pittance, according to the survey, the people will still stick around if they've got good bosses and a nice company culture.
Do you believe that? Do you agree with that?
To some extent, because I think we live in an era where, you know, satisfaction and your personal mental headspace is very important.
Yeah.
Not like, you know, kind of like my generation, right? We just muddle through. Depends. Doesn't matter all the nonsense that goes on in the workplace. You'll just do it because you have to, right? Got to get a salary. In one generation, that has changed. And I think by and large, that's a good thing.
I think I agree with you. I think the working environment is a bigger consideration rather than the pay. Although I have to say, though, this quantum, 12.4 times more likely than compensation, I am skeptical. You know, when I think about the conversations I have with people who want to resign, you know, naturally, they won't say to you outwardly, it is pay. You know, they will try to pass the buck or pass the blame on something else, right? Something beyond their control. And usually company culture is usually a good way to kind of, you know, pass the buck over to say why you're resigning. Whereas maybe your truest intention are things like career progression or pay.
Exactly, which is why I have a bit of a problem with this story because this is an American story, right?
Yeah.
And it reflects American job cultures and they look for things like, which they will leave, right? Abusive leadership, for example, discrimination, cutthroat environments, harassment. I've worked for some American companies in the past. I worked for an American company and a British company. And I tell you, in those days, it was actually quite savage.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of harassment, sexual harassment.
Yep.
There's a lot of gender harassment as well.
So those are
racism as well. So today, no such thing.
I think you're absolutely right. You know, you saw that polarity, right? That huge These things are considered unacceptable. And I think because we are becoming more aware of these situations, they are narrowing. So even the definition of toxicity and what we think is it's a terrible or cruel place, work culture, becomes a bit grayer over a period of time, because I think many companies are taking are really addressing these really like no-go situations already. So it's very hard sometimes to use culture as the basis, you know, when we see things slowly moderate. It's going to be things like the politics of the company. Yeah. Like how, you know, someone maybe is unfairly biased or biased towards someone else, that unfairness. You know, they are a bit more subtle and a bit more arbitrary, but they very much now define the company culture versus the things like, you know, abusive or sexual harassment. Although, to be fair, and let's not admit it, let's not discount it, I'm sure it's still around and still quite prevalent.
Yeah, it could be much more subtle now and much more under the covers. I just want to relate a story. Back in the day when I was at an American company, right, the editors, you know how the editors for Asia, they used to be hired, right? They were brought in. It started with one guy who was a backpacker, and he was backpacking through Asia. He brought in all his buddies, and they all became editors at the expense of more experienced, more, in my opinion, qualitative journalists from Asia, though. So there was that element there.
Yeah.
And you couldn't make a sound because it's an American company, right? Today, I think the push factor, and there's push and pull factors. And this is something which is present in Malaysia as well. If you don't like this, you know, if you don't like to work for that big established company, you can work for the startup. The startup is cooler, it's funkier, it's a more hip environment. And oftentimes the money is better because they raise so much money from VCs in the past, right?
I really like the analogy, because what we talk about is we are shifting the conversation from push to pull, right? Yeah. Because last time, many times is when we resign, it's because we really pushed to do it, because we are forced to leave the environment. But now I think the situation is a bit harder. It is also a combination of push and pull, which is outside. There's so many interesting opportunities out there. And then I begin to compare and contrast, and I see the world very differently.
Yeah.
So I think our view of the world makes it larger. And so then we have clear idea of what a culture is. We personalize what the definition of culture is. So then company culture becomes very hard to reconcile with.
And in certain cases, the candidate doesn't even bother about the culture, right? Because the other side, other than the startup culture, startup environment, is the fact that the gig economy, being a freelancer, is that much more acceptable now, right? A lot of people are doing it. There's a lot more autonomy attached to it. You can do whatever you like in your spare time. You can work as hard as you want. You can work as little as you want.
Absolutely. I think you hit the nail on the head, which is now there are different forms of employment taking place, which allows you to decide how you want to calibrate or even distance yourself from the company culture, but still do the work you enjoy to do. Yeah. Right? It's really a function of whether the company still wants to do it, though.
Yeah.
You know, and that's also, I think, a challenge happening everywhere, right, with gig work and even with freelance and such, right? You want to do the work, but maybe you don't get immersed into the company culture as well.
Yeah, and then I think there's a third element as well, which is a little bit less relevant in Malaysia. But the thing is, the cachet of working for maybe Bain, for example, or McKinsey, or even Goldman's, dare I say it, right? Has a little less luster today than it did then.
Sure.
Because, I mean, between, say, for example, working for Bain or going to work for example, Block or at Jack Dorsey's new outfit, which one is cooler? It's got to be Block, right?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So
yes, you're right. I think that tolerance, right, to say, look, I have to tolerate this abusive or difficult culture because it's good for my brand, it's good for my CV, I think it's dissipating and of reduced importance. I think people now are saying, look, tell me about your experience on a personal level. How are you trying to do different things, right? So even backpacking, learning a language, doing a degree,
absolutely,
or even trying to do your own endeavor is perhaps even more rewarding than joining these larger institutions as well.
Yeah, so today's theme will be to do with employment and resignations and autonomies and personal goals and ambitions. I mean, tell us what you think. Should you leave? Are you thinking of leaving? What goes through your mind when you're thinking of leaving? The WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899 and the Twitter handle is at BFM Radio. Tell us what you think, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, David Bowie with a song that is named after my learned colleague, Phil, called Starman.
Why am I a Starman?
Because you is a star, dude.
Star or stud?
Star. The only reason why we're talking like that is because it's a Thursday and Thursdays are Friday juniors.
Yes.
And we're still talking about the workplace. And this story comes from the BBC, okay?
Okay.
www. BBC.com.
The BBC. The British Broadcasting Corporation. The
British Broadcasting Corporation, yeah? Right? And this is something which is very interesting because if you're thinking about resigning, right, and usually there's a time of year to resign.
Yeah.
So practical Chinese people from Penang will say, well, the best time is after your bonus lah.
Which
is January lah, right? Well, collect your bonus, yeah, then exit stage gracefully on your left, and then you're done.
Well, so I think it's for then. I think you're absolutely right,
right.
Which is bonus. Wait for the bonus, but usually bonus is paid out after Chinese New Year, isn't it? So it's not necessarily January exactly, but somewhere around end February, March. So I honestly think this February, March, you're going to see a massive wave of exodus and resignation letters.
What the practical Chinese guy from Penang doesn't realize, right, is that there are also practical Chinese people working in HR departments. So then they stagger the bonus payments over the next three quarters. Like, typically, like, you know, the star, right?
Yeah.
They pay you bonus like a little bit in March and a little bit in June and a little bit in September. So then you stick around, like, you know what I mean?
If
you leave before then, sorry, la.
I've even heard people bond the bonus.
Bond
the bonus. It means like we pay you the bonus, but you must stay for a minimum 1 year. Yeah, exactly. They pay you more than usual. Isn't that crazy? So I've even heard things like that because you're right. People are anticipating this whole exodus because of the pandemic the past 2-3 years.
No, like, everyone has always been the case. This whole cat and mouse game is just getting
I think it's getting much worse though.
Yeah. Or more sophisticated, la.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
So just like the other story, right? Just the one we did a few minutes ago, right? I think the key thing here is that if you're a worker, you've got to level up, right? If you up your skills, then you become much more marketable.
Yeah.
So if you're much more marketable in whatever skill it is that the marketplace needs, then you can negotiate, la, right? For example, if you don't pay me my bonus or if you don't give me a raise, well, sayonara, baby, right? One of those things. Mm. You know what I mean?
I think that's very true. And this is the challenge. Is before you talk about the resignation, can we have a conversation about the career?
Yeah.
Can we talk about, you know, how do we promote you? How do we basically recognize your work first? So it's very much linked to your performance management, essentially. And the challenge in Malaysian companies, we really don't have that proper conversation on performance about, okay, we've been in the company. I've actually had conversations before with people who have been in the same job for 8 years, okay, on the cusp of being promoted, but then tendered the resignation. So my advice to him was, hey, why don't you stay? At least get promoted, stay for another 1-2 years. If you want to move on, it's fine. At least you show career progression in your first tenure. It's going to be hard if you don't progress at all.
So this person had been there for 8 years and hadn't been promoted in 8 years.
Yes.
So that's a bit of a...
That was a misnomer. So when I came in, you know, when I was my previous job and I was assuming the role, I was like, okay, we have to kind of put this in place. And I realized, okay, he wasn't recognized for the work, but he was so frustrated that he wanted to resign straight away. But I said, look, if you resign and get a better job now, does it really help you in your long-term career?
Yeah, and I think a distinction has to be made here because it depends on what department you're in, right? If you're in the department which makes money for the organization, and for example, if you have clients that are loyal to you, if you're a rainmaker, for example, and iBanks are very good at this, right? They're very good at rewarding rainmakers, star employees with good bonuses and good deals and promotions and what have you, right? So the Goldmans of this world, the Morgans of this world, the CIMBs of this world. But if you're in a department which doesn't generate money for the company, it's tough. It's tough to negotiate the deals.
It's very hard. I agree.
Right?
I mean, I think if you can link your KPIs with like tangible numbers, it's very easy. But many functions, right, like projects related or support functions, they're more driven by your actions, your projects, or even a certain extent, your behaviors. That's very hard then to, you know, justify promotions and moving up as well.
La. So media, for example, journalists, right? Very tough to ask for.
Do
you know what I mean, right? Because you're not generating revenue necessarily, right?
Yeah.
But if you're in a bank and you're in, say, ECM, you know, equity capital markets or whatever, right? And you're generating IPOs and secondaries and you're making the company a lot of money. And they say, if you say, look, if you don't pay me my bonus, I'm going to go to bank B. And they're going to, oh, no, are you going to stay? I'll give you VP, I'll give you 12 months bonus and please stick around.
So I wonder what happens then.
For the next 12 months at least.
Right? Correct. So if I think about the cycle, right, if people all go and take this herd mentality and all resign en masse in February or March, right, let's run that scenario.
Do you think that resignation thing is happening in Malaysia?
Oh, I for sure. But I think it's not happening everywhere. It's happening in certain parts only. So I think in cross-functional areas, I think it's very evident. But in some areas where I think if you're low-skilled or highly technical, perhaps not so much.
I find that this is amazing. In Malaysia, where, you know, things are quite tough, and you can resign without a backup. That is interesting to me.
Yeah, but I've also seen people where they resign and move to a job where the pay is triple or double as well. So there's also this huge changes in the industry and in and economy, which is really creating a lot of opportunities for people to move. But my question is herd mentality. Should you resign en masse or should you be more tactical and leave at the right time as well? Because for me, one of the things I've learned as a boss and also as an employee is you always want to leave on a high. You never want to leave your boss on a lurch also. Especially,
and never burn bridges ever.
And never
ever,
burn
ever,
bridges yeah. ever, right? I think people tend to not think about that in these times. People tend to be a bit more selfish.
Very interesting. And I think we also haven't really talked about entrepreneurship, right? Because if you have an organization which encourages entrepreneurship within the organization, right? And then you build up new pockets of revenue for the company, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so it's a scope of work in the opportunities and career. So again, it's a conversation, right? Before you resign, what else can you do, right? To basically show you can broaden your skill, your portfolio and your career.
Well, again, tell me and Phil what you think on this whole idea of employment. Next up is Ice House with Great Southern Land, BFM 89.9. 13th of January 2022. I'm Koo Soo Chong with Philip C. Now, it's that time of the morning when we look at the international news headlines. And I want to start with this blockbuster of a story. And it's about how America has just issued a whole raft of new 25-cent coins, quarters, known in that part of the world. And for the first time ever, they're going to be going with a lot of women on their quarters. Maya Angelou, the first black woman, is going to be gracing the first quarter. But there's also a slew of other women involved. And this person, I want to cite because she will also be on the quarter. The name of this person is Wilma Mankiller. Okay, I didn't read that wrong. Her name really is Wilma Mankiller. And she was the first female principal chief of the Cherokee Nation. So I thought that was worth mentioning.
Okay, well, I personally am very happy that they're actually highlighting the incredible women who have done great work in lifting the country of the United States. I personally am very happy Maya Angelou is actually also featured in the coins because I read some of her books. I Know Why the Cage Bird Sings. Incredibly written, beautifully written book. So, you know, kudos to her. Congratulations to her and her family for being recognized.
Yeah, and on the premise that native Red Indians in America are named after the things that they've done, just like Dances with Wolves, Mankiller aptly describes what she used to do in the past. Kudos to her.
Wonderful name. But we shift to a bit more serious notes, and I think this is a point
that
about...
That was very serious.
It was serious, yeah. But I think more serious now is, I think if you look across in the UK, I think this is a point where it really was a bad idea to go and attend that party, because now Boris Johnson is facing a lot of scrutiny from members of his own party, calling him to quit after he apologised attending a party in Downing Street when he was supposed to be not attending, not supposed to be having a party. So he was there, apparently socially distanced, but in the times when there were these COVID lockdown measures in the UK, and the Downing Street did organise these parties.
Bojo can't seem to do anything right, can he? I know a lot of Brits in Malaysia, and they've all of them are quite disparaging about Boris Johnson.
Yes, they were. They are very disparaging. I think he did a very good job in selling Brexit, but many people, say that he hasn't really done much beyond Brexit. And this is where I think, you know, he has been able to ride it through. I think the UK also has a very good vaccination program. But this whole series of different parties that took place in Christmas, over the spring, summer period, I think has really dent a blow. And he was quite Teflon in the past, but in the past few...
As in stuff doesn't stick to him.
Yes,
bad stuff doesn't stick to him.
Bad stuff doesn't stick to him. But in this case here, I think his apology that came overnight, I think, is now calling for a whole raft of Tory backbenchers to call for his resignation. He only needs 45 nominations. 45 backbenchers have to write into their 1922 committee, in which then a leadership contest will be initiated.
Well, talking about prime ministers and sovereign state leaders, you know how the UK has got a good friend in the US because they've got this special relationship going. And Boris Johnson's counterpart in America is also largely disapproved of in the Great Northern America Strait. Because according to Quinnipiac's latest poll, Joe Biden's approval rating is at an all-time low. And that means just 33% of Americans approve of him, while 53% of those polled disapprove of him. Obviously, it's his handling of the COVID virus, the economy, presumably.
Yeah.
Of course, there's this big political divide in America between the Republicans and the Democrats as well.
It is. It's huge. But I think these polls are terrible. I mean, what a big drop from 49% to 33%. I think there are questions about the handling of the economy. But I think closer to home, you know, pocketbook economics, you know, how much do you have left in your pocket? And that's the issue, right? When you have inflation at 7%, which came out just recently, that's putting a lot of pressure on people's wallets, and people are not happy by that. There are also issues on how he handled Afghanistan. There are challenges also with respect to how he's managed border security as well going forward. So I think he started well, I think, with a whole series of stimulus packages, and I think a fresh tone from, I think, President Trump. But I think his popularity is wearing thin at the moment.
Absolutely. A majority of Americans, according to Quinnipiac, think the nation's democracy is in danger of collapse. Now, I mean, that is interesting for a country that thinks of itself as a land of the free and the brave.
I find that interesting that it's coming during President Joe Biden's presidency, because I wouldn't necessarily level that accusation at him, right, where he's putting democracy at stake there, you know, because I think he's trying to enforce a couple of voting right amendments. He's actually not, you know, he's quite anti-Trump in his, you know, his approach to building consensus. So I'm very worried that there's this perception that he's actually trying to even weaken democracy.
Absolutely. And just before we break off for the, you know, before the local news, I just want to talk about how Novak Djokovic, who was in the news recently for not wanting to take a vaccine and entering the Australian Open and being allowed in. Yeah. I think the hint was in his name, because he's actually called Novak, right? No vaccine. Bad joke.
Oh my goodness, that's a terrible joke.
But the news here is that his Australian Open drama will be shown on Netflix. So again, that's interesting. Netflix have got amazing behind the scenes access to the immigration saga. So stay tuned for that.
Isn't this like trying to milk a crisis? It's quite tasteless, isn't it, on so many levels?
That's how the media works, man.
Oh, it's terrible. I mean, I to time it and announce it in such a short space of time, my goodness, you know.
That's right. 6:44, I'll come back after this with the local news. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was The Cure with Boys Don't Cry. It is 6:48 in the
morning. Which is a lie. I think boys do cry.
Actually, boys do cry. I've seen Roger Federer cry, actually.
Yeah. It's a lie.
Yeah, it's a lie. It's a misnomer. Anyway, this story from the good PR folks at I think, Aquilus. They actually announced that Sen Heng has actually attracted quite a lot of demand for their retail portion of the shares. And the Sen Heng, of course, is Sen Heng Retail. They run the white goods electronics maker.
I actually interviewed Mr. Lim Keng Heng, actually.
Yeah, before you and me.
We interviewed him twice.
That's right. Yes. Nice fella.
Yeah, he's a very nice fella. I think he knows his business clearly very well.
He's definitely not crying.
He wasn't crying. But to be fair, interesting, the numbers oversubscribed, I think 10x, right? 10 times.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, this is interesting, because Sen Heng is going to be one of the biggest, deepest IPOs this year. They're trying to issue 250 million new shares and offer for sale 140 million shares. So about 400 million shares, right? Mm. Going to go out into the market. No, sorry. 250 will go into the market. 140 will basically be an offer for sale, which is the owner selling the stock. But the retail portion is tiny, only 30 million shares. So for it to attract 10 times demand is actually not such a big deal, presumably, because there's only 30 million shares.
Yeah,
and this for the entire Malaysian public.
You know? I agree with you. And I think if you compare with other IPOs around this time zone, Coriza, 132.5 times oversubscribed, Ecomate, 99 times, Aurelius, 20.3 times.
Yeah, but the retail portion is all minuscule.
It's all minuscule, but I think it's a comparative relative level of oversubscription that's taking place. This is on the lower end, isn't it?
Yeah, ish. But it's also an indication of amount of retail money that's sitting on the sidelines. A lot of cash, right, waiting to be deployed, you know, into good names. These bankers sometimes are, you know, the way they structure these IPOs.
Well, I wonder if 2022 will be the year of more IPOs.
I think people are
very optimistic that 2022 will be a year where there'll be flush liquidity. And talking about a place with flush liquidity, I shift over to the Malaysian Reserve in Singapore. Singapore's GIC is set to manage an extra, check this out, 574 billion ringgit in reserves. You know, there's going to be a massive influx of new funds to manage after the city-state in Singapore changed the way the central bank transfers excess foreign currency reserves to the firm.
Wait, hang on a second. So GIC, 575 billion, right?
Yes.
Is this ringgit or Singapore dollars?
That's ringgit. But even so, it is still quite a large number.
That's about 150 billion US dollars, right?
Correct. Because Parliament on Tuesday passed a bill allowing the Monetary Authority of Singapore to buy a new type of non-marketable security issued by the government. As a result, a new mechanism will be used to bring down the level of foreign reserves held by the central bank to a rate equal to 65 to 75% of the GDP. And so the biggest beneficiary will be the GIC.
Wow, interesting. That's interesting because I think that the latest Forex reserves, Bank Negara announced that $116 billion in Forex reserves.
Yep.
And that's all they have. I mean, compared to Singapore, that's just, you know,
$1.76 trillion.
Yeah.
Ringgit.
Chalk and cheese.
Chalk and
man.
Cheese, absolutely.
And talking about money, HSBC has got a new boss. The boss is named Omar Siddiq. He's resigned from CIMB. He's named as HSBC Malaysia's new CEO. Nice guy. Smart as nails.
And he's apparently moved around. I think he was in Malaysia Aviation Group before, RHB, CIMB, Kazana. So he's not a novice in this area.
Yeah, he's been around the block a couple of times and in a good way. What else is out there, Phil?
Well, I think overnight, we saw this from Ministry of Health, our health minister. They've introduced new quarantine exemption rules for travellers with COVID infection history now. So there's actually an exemption from quarantine if you've been fully vaccinated and you've contracted COVID-19 within 11 to 60 days of your arrival. I find that very interesting. That means that if
you... So this Ministry of Health, is it?
Ministry of Health, from Khairi itself. And he actually said, look, they've actually done the research and they say all you need to do is come in and get an RTK antigen test in the presence of a government health worker and you're off. You no need to do a quarantine. So for me, it's a very interesting point that if you've got COVID and you're double vaccinated, just do the RTK test and then you're scot-free.
So this is something which is interesting. So if you're vaxxed, you can still get the COVID virus.
Oh, for sure, yes. Yeah. So, yes, but I think the whole point
of... Some people might say, then why get the
whole point of Bella is to reduce the severity. Yeah. That is the benefit of getting the booster doses and the jabs, right? Because it does reduce severity. So, but why I find interesting is that, you know, and I'm wondering, and I don't know whether there's a clarity on this. If I have COVID and I got vaccinated, I don't get quarantined. But if I don't get COVID and get fully vaccinated, I also get I have to get quarantined then.
Yeah, so I think the issue is basically it's a headline rule. If you have some kind of natural immunity and artificial immunity, that makes you a bit like the Bionic Man, right? Double strong. Mm. You got the shield and the armor.
Yeah. So this is, I think what he calls about with hybrid immunity, which is a very interesting story because we've actually seen some recent stories by the WHO where they expect actually half of Europe to contract Omicron. Right. That's how transmissive it is. Right.
But it's also quite mild, right?
It is mild. So I think there's this whole, and I think to be fair, many also expect that the cases are expected to peak also very soon in the United Kingdom. So there is some silver lining there.
Yeah. And I think this whole debate about the end of the pandemic, as we know it, this whole debate about how to define it now, whether it's a pandemic or an endemic, the WHO is in the whole narrative now.
Yeah.
So I think that we are approaching the last stage of this, you know, hopefully this
I hope
virus,
so.
You know.
Yeah.
And it will then define the legal obligations and the conditions for travel and what have you.
Yes.
So hopefully 2022 is going to be the one that, you know, really kicks off the whole equation again.
It's very true because, you know, you have these conversations, right? This L word is not going to be allowed to be discussed anymore. There's no such thing as a lockdown. I think even Hishamuddin Hussein previously in the quartet meeting said that they would probably not do a lockdown, but tighten border restrictions, which is a very good point you raised, Chuang. What does that mean for international travel? What does it mean later? Right? Do we see that recovery happening? Probably domestic won't be a problem. And that's why we're going to have a conversation with Brendan Sobey about how Asia-Pacific travel will look like.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.